Welcome to the Harrison Faith Church Podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from Pastor Brian Herring. It's our prayer this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
We started a series about when necessary, and started off the whole idea with the premises of when we need to share the gospel, when necessary, use words. And so we went in the last couple of weeks, and today we're going to start in our third part of the series and just talking about this idea today, wanting the unwanted. I'll tell you, it's easy when we think about things to have things lined up in a certain way at a certain time, and God just works everything out, and you get to talk to someone about the Lord or invite them to church, and it's easy. But today, I want to dive into the fact of what happens when we need to reach people and talk to people that are very difficult. When life gets messy and people's life doesn't work out the way you hoped, their life is in shambles, it's horrible, they've got all sorts of problems, and they don't just have one problem, they have lots of issues, and it doesn't fit into your daily routine and your daily problems, how do you minister? How do you talk to those people? And why do we avoid those situations so much? You ever have that person that you know that they need to talk to somebody, you know that they're desiring to talk to somebody, you know that they're in deep need, their heart is aching to talk to someone, but you see them coming and they're coming across at Walmart and you're thinking, I don't have that much time today, Lord. And so you take your cart and you turn like, oh, I didn't really see them. We got some people in here. We know. We've all been there. We've all had those moments. And I'm not here to shame anybody. This ain't about Walmart shaming, I promise you. This is about encouraging us to do exactly what Jesus did and reach out to people that nobody else is wanting. Every time I've seen a church explode, a youth ministry, a children's ministry explode, it's because they were willing to reach people that nobody else wanted. They were willing to put their lives out and their hearts on the line and their time and energy on people that nobody else wanted. Because everybody likes the clean-cut version of what comes to church, but very few people like the beginning stages before they get cleaned up and tidied up and look nice and smell nice. Right? I mean, I'll be honest. I don't like sitting by someone in a restaurant or somewhere where I go that smells bad. It makes me not want to eat sometimes, but that's a whole other story. But I love them, and I think that we need to let our love be shown through our actions and our attitude towards people, and that's what we need to dive in. So we're going to talk about Mark chapter 5, and we're going to read verses 1 through 20 today. So we're going to be here till about 1:30. Why y'all laughing? I'm kidding. But Jesus had climbed, was getting ready to climb out of the boat after he just was on the Sea of Galilee and calmed the storm. We read the story. If you read the chapter earlier, he just literally spoke to the storm, caused it to calm down, and he's getting out of the boat, and as he's getting out of the boat, a demon-possessed man runs up to him. And as he runs up to him, he basically starts crying out to him and ask him to have mercy on him. And the way Jesus responded is just so much like Jesus, and I think this is where we need to put our hearts and our minds today. So beginning in verse 1, he said this, "So they traveled at the other side of the lake in the region of Gerasenes, and when Jesus climbed out of the boat, a man possessed by an evil spirit came out from the tombs to meet him. Just put a thumbnail right there and write this down. Wanting the unwanted will take you to some unexpected places. Here he is. He got out. The Bible says that this man crawled out from among the tombs. He crawled out from the place of a graveyard. He came to us. You know, how many people just think, you know what, I feel today that I'm going to go to a graveyard and just see what's out there? Because, you know, that's just the fun place to be. That's not fair. You work in that's your profession. That's a whole other story. Yeah, so many jokes, but they're not church appropriate right now. That's not okay. We're gonna go on message. So, can you imagine? Here it is. If it was right here in Harrison, Arkansas, and they were going out, and Jesus comes up, and a demon possessed man comes to him, the Harrison Daily Times would report revival breaks out over at the cemetery. Can you just imagine what it must have been like for Jesus to show up on the scene and this event to take place? And nonetheless, this is exactly what happened, because God does his greatest work at unexpected places. He was at the place where the fishing boats were. He was beside wells, and he was going to a hill called Skull Hill when he did his greatest work. He was always in the most difficult and weird places. He wasn't working necessarily in the church. Most of Jesus' ministry took place in the byways, not in a building. That's worth writing down if you're taking notes. Most of Jesus' ministry took place in the byways, not in buildings. His ministry took place out in where people were. He was constantly going out. I bet Jesus didn't keep office hours, because his whole life was going out to where people were and ministering to the lost and being there. As a matter of fact, out of the 132 contacts that Jesus had with people, 6 were in synagogues, 4 were in temples, but 122 times were in the mainstream of life, of everyday life. Most of Jesus' ministry took place where people were, where they were doing life, where they were doing ministry, and that's where he wants us. When you're on your job, when you're out doing grocery shopping, when you're out at a restaurant, when you're out just going along your daily life, that's when he takes up opportunity to provide opportunities for you to do the greatest ministry. That's where it's all about. The challenge for the church is to get out of the mind frame that we're just going to serve in a program, which programs are great. They help us. We do programs to help complete the ministry. They're all part of it. But what he wants to get in the church's mind is that we're to take the church, this body of believers, out to where people are who don't know Jesus, so that we can be Jesus where they are. And we can share this glorious gospel, this wonderful good news, with everybody we come in contact with. We've got some about to take off for college. Now, parents are like, oh my, but let me tell you, you are missionaries to a great mission field if you're going to a college campus. Some of the greatest demon-possessed people you'll ever meet are on the university campus. Let me tell you, you better have a Bible in each pocket and on your phone, and you better know the Word of God, because let me tell you, you will be challenged in your belief, and you'll be tempted, and you may feel strong, but it's easy to feel strong amongst the body of believers, but when you get on that college and university campus, you will be challenged in your faith. It's amazing to me how many people go in blind and don't realize how easily overtaken they are by the temptations of this world, because they've never been confronted to that degree. But the devil is no fool, and he's coming after you. The church must go out into the world to touch the world. We live in a time, and I put this in my notes before I go into the next verse. We live in a time of spiritual deadness. So here he is, he's walking among the tombs, and I just think that's so symbolic of how we walk in a time of spiritual deadness. People are so unaware of spiritual things in everyday life. You ever walk into a place and you just say, ooh, I just have a bad feeling about this place. And you just feel like the Spirit of God just kind of stirring in your stomach, and you just don't feel right about something. And other people are like, what's the problem? What's your issue? You know, like, kind of, what's the deal? Because people walk, they're just so dead to the things of this world and the things that they see, the things that they put in front of them. They have no real concept of the consequences of the things that they allow into their life. And we fail to remember this, that sometimes to permit is to participate in allowing things to go on in our home and in our life, or sometimes to participate in them, because we tell everybody around us that this is okay with us. Verse 3. This man lived in the burial caves and could no longer be restrained, even with chains. Let me just tell you this, that sometimes the chains that bind someone on the inside are greater than the chains that bind someone on the outside. And the problem is that so many times people go through life and they think because they can break through and they can break through all these little things on the outside that they're free. But the truth is, what's binding them on the inside is what's really the problem. And if they could get to the point where they could be set free on the inside, it would really set them free and they would know what real freedom is. Verse 4, whenever he was put into chains and the shackles, as he often was, he snapped the chains from his wrist and smashed the shackles. No one was strong enough to subdue him. He could no longer be controlled by human standards. See, here's the issue is that so many times we have people in life that we talked about this before about the who's your neighbor story where the Good Samaritan came, and sometimes the world will be there when the church won't be there for somebody, the world will be there for them. And that's the easy standard. But the problem is sometimes people have real messy lives, and like this demon-possessed man, it's even the point that the world couldn't even restrain him. The world couldn't even deal with him. And so nobody wants to deal with him. Can you imagine? There are people that in our everyday life that feel shut out by the church, they feel shut out by the world, and nobody will reach out to them because it's too much time, it's too difficult, it's too messy, it's too big of a problem. And I just think, what is God calling us to do as the church? Who should be too difficult for us? Who in this room is got too busy of life, too great, your life is just too full of stuff that you are too busy to deal with people that are deeply in trouble and in bondage? Because everybody in this place, if I would say, is this the church's job? Yes. Who wants to lead the charge? You know, drug rehab is a messy job. Aren't you glad there's some people out there that do that? And we love ministries like Teen Challenge, which Brother Arnold has done such a great job of raising money for that organization. He's on the board with our Teen Challenge here in Arkansas. And it's great because we're great donors. We're not great partners. We like throwing money at a problem, but we don't want to really have to go down there and, you know, do it ourselves. And we have the great mission field of Harrison, Arkansas, Boone County. And if you think there's not drugs here in Harrison, Arkansas, you have lost your mind. You could probably go next door, and I don't care what neighborhood you're in, because this is not a rich people problem, it's not a poor people problem, it's not a middle class problem, it's just a problem. Sexual immorality is fluid around the world, and you're like, why are we talking about this stuff? Because people are bound by it. They're addicted to pornography. They're addicted to sexual things. And I wonder when the church is going to wake up and face it and say, there are people with real problems that are beyond just the average. You want to come to church and you want to say a simple prayer? They are bound by something and they need to be set free. And we're dealing with a generation that if they're too tired, well, the devil just fought them and kept them in bed. Well, boo-hoo, there's people that barely get out of bed because they're so strung out, they're not even sure they're going to wake up the next morning. So if we don't deal with messy people, if we don't deal with people who are bound deeply with addiction and with great big problems and all these issues, who is going to do it? The suicide rate among teens has shot up in the last 10 years, and we sit back and we just think, oh, that's horrible, but we do nothing about it. Our favorite phrase is we'll pray about it, yet we never open our mouth towards heaven about it. Because it's easy to say a little word to make us feel better and ease our conscience than it is to actually deal with the actual issue. And not only this, faith without works is dead. So stop talking about it and let's do something about it. I know it's old me this morning, right? I'm telling you, I am convicted for our church and the church abroad that we have got to do more than talk about how bad things are. We have got to be people that are willing to put into action and deal with the issues of this world and really go after them. We need to see these that are hurting, bound, oppressed, tormented, sick, and lame, and we need to see them set free because that is what he's called us to do. Jesus said, greater works you'll do. And we pawn it off with, well, I'm not Jesus. No, but he better be living in you in this day and age. And he better be working through you during this day and age. Verse 5, day and night he wandered among the burial caves and in the hills, howling and cutting himself with sharp stones. This guy lived among the tombs and was a homeless outcast of society. This man lived destructive behavior in his life, and he was a cutter. We think cutting's a new thing. You see teenagers, and they're cutting their body and marking the body. This thing has been around for a long, long time. The idea of cutting is not a new thing. It was this guy being so tormented by voices and these feelings that he was cutting himself and he was howling. He was an absolute misery. And like a lot of people in here today, he had no peace. He had no contentment. He had no happiness. He was depressed. He was filled with doubt. He was filled with worry. He had nothing. He was just worn out, defeated, thinking, how am I going to make it? How am I going to get any further? In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, and you ought to listen to this because we got kids that are going back to the campus. And let me tell you, if you think the campus is a safe place for kids, let me tell you, there's been demonic spirits, I think, waiting there all summer long saying, we can't wait, we can't wait, we can't wait, we can't wait. 1 Peter 5, 8 says, stay alert, watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. He is on a warpath. There's a devil loose out there, and he is looking for someone to destroy and devour. And I think, my goodness, what are we going to do, church? Are we just going to sit back and think how horrible the situation is? And I realize God hasn't called everybody to do everything, but he has told us as the church that this is what we're supposed to do. Heal the brokenhearted, loose the captives. We need to do this. We need to do spiritual warfare. We need to do pragmatic warfare, and we need to put our hands to the plow and go out to a lost and dying world and show them Jesus. We believe, and we are a Pentecostal church through and through. We believe in the power of the Holy Spirit as it works within us. So why aren't we seeing what God can do through the manifestations of his Holy Spirit? Wanting the unwanted will bring some undesirable people across your path. There's going to be people that you don't want to deal with. There's going to be people I don't want to deal with. That's what makes them undesirable. Because if you wanted to deal with them and it all flowed smoothly, they wouldn't be undesirable, would they? The church must have a heart for the unreached, undesirable people of the world. Reaching undesirable people is going to be messy, and it's a messy business. It's not pleasant. But we have got to do something, roll up our sleeves and say, what can we do? And I'll tell you today, on this Sunday morning, I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the programs that we need to start. I don't have all the ministries that need to be launched. But I know that it starts in our heart. And today, our heart needs to start with the idea that we have got to reach this lost and dying world. And we need men and women to get a burden for it, a heart for it, and are willing to launch ministries out to do this. We need to partner with ministries. Instead of just donating, we need to partner with people in town and do things. We need to do outreaches out in the community. We need to take this glorious gospel to the world to reach the world. We got to ask the Lord to take us to the place and to the people and put them in our path that are so greatly need you, that need you, that need God more than they need their next breath. Verse 6. When Jesus was still some distance away, the man saw him and ran to meet him and bowed low before him. And with a shriek, he screamed, why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In the name of God, I beg you, don't torture me. For Jesus had already said to the spirit, come out of the man, you evil spirit. But this is what Jesus did. Jesus always reached out to a society, to people that society gave up on. He reached out to lepers. He reached out to the blind. He reached out to the brokenhearted. He reached out with people with no hope. He was constantly going. He was always besides wells. He was dealing with people that society had thrown out and cast out and wanted nothing to deal with. That's who Jesus ministered to all the time. This was all about who Jesus was. He healed them. He saved them. And he changed their lives forever because that's who Jesus is. Now, I say this, and I don't want us to pass the buck in this place, saying that just because Pastor Brian's saying we need to take this gospel out in the world, that I don't realize there's not people in here that are bound. You are emotionally bound. You're depressed all the time. You're going through low times. You don't know how you're going to make it. You've got addictions your spouse doesn't know about. You've got things going on that nobody, you don't even talk about because you don't want people to look down upon you. You're going through hell and nobody knows it because Sunday morning you put on your good clothes, you comb your hair nice, and you walk in the door like everything's okay, and you put a smile on your face, but on the inside you're dying. Because even though you can break the outside look, on the inside, you're still bound. Verse 9. Then Jesus demanded, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, because we are many," or there are many of us on the inside of this man. Isn't this funny? We know that people have problems, but we forget people have many problems. We fix one problem and we think, "Well, I tried." No, sometimes you got many holes in a boat to fix. It's not just one. There's not just one issue. There's lots of issues. There are lots of problems. And in life, we fail to forget that many times people have more than just one big issue. They have all these different circumstances and situations in their life, and they're tormented, and they've got all these different problems because we like dealing with one thing and focusing on one thing, but sometimes people come with multiple problems. Abused, sexually abused as a child, in an abusive relationship as an adult, led to other things in their life that they're not happy with and not proud of. They've got all these things going on in their life and they don't know what to do, and they're so tormented, and we're so focused on the now that we forget the eternal, and we're so focused on the minimal that we don't reach the maximum of what God has for people because we are so narrow-minded sometimes in our scope. Paul knew this. He said, "I got to be all things to all people. I've got to the Jew, I've got to be a Jew, to the Gentile. I've got to figure out how to minister to where people are, no matter where they are, and reach people with whatever part of life and wherever they're coming out of." Then the evil spirit begged him again not to send him to some distant place. And there just happened to be a herd of pigs feeding on the hillside nearby. And they said, "Send us into those pigs." The spirit begged, "Let us enter into them." So Jesus gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out of the man and entered into the pigs. And the entire herd, about 2,000 pigs, plunged down a steep hill into the lake and drowned in the water. And the herdsmen fled to the nearby town and the surrounding countryside to spread the good news as they ran. People rushed out to see what had happened. And a crowd soon gathered around Jesus, and when they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons, he was sitting there fully clothed and perfectly sane, and they were all afraid. When I read this, I thought, man, why were they afraid? Why were they afraid that this man who had been cutting himself, howling, having to be chained because he was causing so many problems. Why was he afraid? There was such a dramatic change in the man. The men who came out to see him were just so just overwhelmed that they couldn't wait to go tell the town. So they ran into the town and all this stuff happened. And the man was in his right mind and they just couldn't figure out what happened. So all these people come out and they saw him and they were afraid. And all I could think is, if Jesus changed them, is he going to mess with my life? Because I'm really not that bad, but I don't want everybody to know all my business. I'm not really as bad as that guy was. I mean, he had lots of problems. Let's face it. Legion. Whew, thousands of demons in him. Me, little white sin. But if this man changed, the problem is maybe in that crowd there were people who just weren't ready to be changed. And there was a dramatic change, and I love 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 17. It says, "And this means that anyone who belongs to Christ is a new person. The old life is gone. A new life has begun. He is a new creature with a new feature." He looked different on the outside because he was different on the inside. said, then those who had witnessed what had happened told the others about the demon-possessed man and the pigs, and the crowd began pleading with Jesus to go away and leave them alone. What? Do you see what he did for this demon-possessed man? Again, that's great. You need to change them, but stay out of my business. And I thought to myself, isn't that like us church folk? We like pointing, but we don't like changing. And maybe I'm just talking about myself. If you're feeling guilty, so fine. It's all right. Maybe I'm talking about myself. Maybe I like sitting down here going, can you believe what Melinda's doing? Melinda could take it. I just have to hide from her after church, but y'all know why Claude's so quiet, right? I'm just kidding. No, but you know, we're so busy. We don't want to be changed. We don't mind. We like everybody else being changed. We like hearing the results of everybody else being changed, but don't get all up in my business. Who are you to tell me, show me, present anything to me? But let me just tell you this. Wanting the unwanted will give you an opportunity to see the unequal power of Jesus Christ. Jesus spoke, and the demons had no choice but to leave. And they knew it because in advance they like, what? Don't just tell us to go to a different place. All right, go to the pigs. And immediately they did it. They went, they were gone. Immediately went out of the man, totally gone, and went in some pigs, and they all ran into the water and died. I don't know what benefit was to go in the pigs if you're going to go and drown yourself, but that's what happened. Now, I put this in my notes, and this is worth writing down. I'll say it twice just so you can get it. The church today must have a revival of confidence in the power of the gospel to save whoever, wherever, whenever it is proclaimed. It's like the song we sang a while ago. You are my confidence. You have never failed me yet. The church today must have a revival of confidence in the power of the gospel to save whoever, wherever, whenever it is proclaimed. And if you need to have that, you see me after church. If you are a follower of Christ, you have been warming the benches in church, what are you waiting for? If you've been coming here week after week and enjoying and just warming a pew and not sharing this wonderful gospel, what are you waiting for? Because as a follower of Christ, it is our duty to share this gospel to all people, to go into the world and make disciples. It's our job. It's our duty. It's our commission. If you start asking God today to show you the mission he has for your life, let me tell you, he'll begin to do it. Verse 18, as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. And the most extraordinary thing happened. Jesus told him no. Instead of saying, you can just be a straggler and sit on a pew and just follow me that way, he commissioned him to go into the cities and tell them about what just had happened to him. That's what he did. Surprise, surprise. He commissioned him to be a missionary to the Gentiles. He commissioned him to go and not just sit around and not just do nothing and not just sit on a pew and not just follow around and not just do this and just follow him from... He said, now you go and tell people. Verse 19, it says, but Jesus said, no. Go home to your family and tell them everything the Lord has done for you and how merciful he has been. Then here's the result. So the man started off and visited 10 towns of that region and began to proclaim the great news Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed at what he told them. Everybody was just like blown away. They were like, are you kidding me? And nobody could deny it because everybody knew him. He had a reputation. You don't have to raise your hand, but anybody in here knows some people with some reputations? Anybody been praying for someone to go to them? How many of you might be that person? You know? Jesus encountered with this man in Mark was a great example of what he's asking us and he's telling us to do on a regular basis. And that's to go proclaim the gospel in the moment of need. The man approached Jesus with obvious problems. They were very open. Everybody kind of knew what they were. And he got spiritual deliverance and healing and even was physically clothed. Psalms chapter 40, verse 2 and 3. We used to sing a song off this Psalms. It says, he lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and out of the mire. He set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walk along. He has given me a new song to sing, a hymn of praise to God, to our God. Many will see what he has done and be amazed. They will put their trust in the Lord. Isn't that good? I know all of you singing that song in your mind right now, right? He brought me out of the miry clay. As we're closing and the worship team comes, because I have asked them to sing a song at this close. Jesus helped people in the moment of their greatest need. He didn't do it when it was easiest. He didn't do it when there would be less people talking about it. He did it when they were the most in need. And I believe that he will equip us to reach people in their greatest need as well. Four closing thoughts. Number one, don't write anyone off. We have a habit of that. We like, they mess with us. They do things. You're gone. I don't want nothing to do with you. We write people off. We're done. But nowhere in the Bible are you going to find where that's okay. Even the impossible situations can be changed by Jesus Christ. Number two, bring them to Jesus and let him meet their need. First thing you got to realize is you're not the meter of the need, you're the vessel. So you got to bring them to Jesus. He said, if I be lifted up, I'll draw men unto me. Number three, tell someone else about what Christ has done in your life. You got a testimony. You're here today. God's brought you out. He's delivered you. He set you free. Tell someone. And number four, go to your family and friends and tell them about what Jesus is doing. It's our job. It's the Great Commission, not the Great Suggestion. It's the Great Commission. He's called us to do this. Getting involved in wanting the unwanted people of the world is a messy business.